The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by the famous DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and is brought to you by our friends at BodyBio, supplements for a healthier life. Use code RTRS20 for 20% off anything on that site. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds, get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. And Kinetic Skateboarding. Get free tune-ups for the life of every new snowboard purchased at Kinetic Skateboarding right now. On the show today, the West Coast road trip, mostly from hell, continues on, still without Joel Embiid or any real mention of how Joel Embiid is doing. They steal one in Denver, lose one in Portland, maybe find a new backup center in Charles Bassey, who has signed his contract, by the way. Got that update. And Tyrese Maxey still, I don't think, has turned the ball over in at least 3 weeks. And some new trade rumors in the story of Simo the Savage and some a list of 30 players that maybe they're willing to trade him for just never stops. We'd like to thank the Sixers and Clutch for that. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who grabs all of the cranberry sauce and keeps it for himself, one Mike Levin.
Hello. Good morning. Here we are.
How we doing?
We're okay. We got Matisse back.
Yep.
Close to full strength, still missing a guy that I actually really like a lot in Joel Embiid. I enjoy watching him. I remember liking it quite a bit.
Yeah, I think he's going to be something at some point, that Embiid. The Apple Podcast 5-star reviews, the ratings have started once again coming in pretty regularly now that we're reading them. We're at 2,961 5-star ratings. When we get to 3,000, I have to read all of the reviews from 2,000 to 3,000 on one podcast, which I've done twice. This one comes from Hollis Thompson. He says, 5 stars, great pod. Spike's taught me life lessons over the years, more than my own father, weight loss tips, relationship advice, and how to do the fake laugh to make yourself smile in pictures, and just as general life advice. Mike could be better. So there you go. Any comment?
Fair.
So I would say we'll get to Maxey in a second. A lot to talk about with Maxey. But the revelation of this road trip has to be the new thing they found. We talked a bunch about, hey, maybe there are things that can happen without Embiid, with 25 not playing, all these things that could happen. The sort of the Andre Drummond disappearing into Andre Drummondness and them playing Charles Bassey and him being really effective for a couple of games, I think is a discovery that they've made that will benefit them at some point. Now, he is not the sort of player that, as a center, that we've wanted in that different look sort of thing, but the backup center who will set screens, be in the right place at the right time, roll hard to the basket, you know, the sort of non-dipshit version of Dwight Howard. It seems like Charles Bassey is capable of being, as a low second round pick just in his rookie year, is a nice little surprise that I don't think any of us saw coming.
Not a surprise. I'm not surprised. Spike. It's not hard. It really isn't. To be a functional backup center in today's NBA, you have to do so little well. And Doc talked about it, like you have to talk. You have to call out screens. You have to, and he struggled with it in Portland, like determine how to hedge or drop on a pick and roll. Like that's the difficult stuff. But like offensively, screen, roll, screen, roll, catch lobs, be big, offensive rebound, like just be there. And he is, you know, I think a lot of times where players are drafted crystallizes like, oh, this is their value and this has always been their value. But Charles Bassey was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. He was the number one. Tyrese talked about it. He was the number one ranked recruit in Texas, and Maxey was the second. And so Bassey was the 18th ranked overall on ESPN high school recruit the year before James Wiseman, who I think he'll ultimately be better than, ahead of guys like Kobe White and Emmanuel Quickley and Tyler Hero and Jackson Hayes. So like he has a pedigree. He went to Western Kentucky for some kind of unknown reason and then got hurt, and then his stock dropped and he stayed 3 years, which is just not regular. But he's been this kind of player, really good rim protector. You can tell he has like nice touch. He had a little floater, I think it was last night in the lane. Yep, I was really impressed by his passing in a little short roll game. It seemed like he really knew his spots on the court to like, I'm going to get this ball and then I'm going to either look to roll, or if somebody steps up, then that means that there's a guy open in the corner or on the wing, foul line extended, whatever. I thought he was really good at that. And he really is like a classic rim protecting big, like swatting the shit out of any ball that comes there. He had a goaltending call that they got wrong in Portland, which I thought was fine. But he's very Rashawn-esque. He is like, there's a lot of those kinds of guys in the league. Probably doesn't have his motor of Rashawn, maybe not like the vertical athleticism, but that kind of role of just like, hey, here's what I do. I come in here, I'm long. He really is very long. He is a really good defensive rebounder. And he has nice touch on his shot. He's taken a couple threes this year. I think he hit one in preseason, and he has a nice touch from the line. Like he projects as just a extremely functional backup big man. And I'm glad that they got him that late. And finally signed to a contract after a very long time. It's bizarre that it took that long, but I think this is the kind of thing you want. I don't think he's going to like impact the playoff series this year, but cause he's going to be a rookie, make rookie mistakes. But like, this is what you expect from a defensive five man. And this is why, unless they're Embiid, Anthony Davis, those kinds of players, this is why you don't draft a center that high in the draft, because you can get these kinds of guys late.
Well, you mentioned offensively, defensively, it's now two games ago, but just I thought how he looked against Jokic, who is the most advanced offensive center in the NBA and in some time, you know, and it's a one-on-one thing, and defense is more than a one-on-one thing. And you mentioned he's sort of the center, sort of like the linebacker in that case, in what you're doing. But his, like, he stood up to him fine. He did not look overmatched against Nikola Jokic. And Jokic might have been a little hurt, whatever it was. But what I was waiting in that entire game, which I think a lot of Sixers fans were waiting for, is like, well, fuck. Like, Jokic in the fourth quarter is going to, you know what I mean? Like, I was waiting for this at some point, this run of Jokic, which Bassey did a good job of, you know, preventing that from happening. And I think, you mentioned he's not going to impact a playoff series, which is true from a high level. But what I want, if he can buy us 5 minutes, which I am not, that's what I'm not confident with Andre Drummond, right? Sure. Because Andre Drummond just does so many Andre Drummond like dipshit things, and I just want somebody to go in there and do what Bassey is trying to do. And I know he will just try to do that. He might not succeed all the time, but he definitely, which is honestly why signing somebody like Drummond seems like so fucking stupid to me, is even if you think it's a high value signing, you don't want him to do all that shit anyway.
Right.
So he's never going to be happy in that role, right? Like I want a backup to be a backup, I guess. And
yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I think the Drummond signing for me, and we've talked about this a lot, because it was a minimum and because he can, like if Charles Bassey's coming in as a rookie and being like your starting center when Embiid's not there, I think you're probably a little scared. But Drummond has had good games this season for sure. And he's done things well. It's becoming my pet issue that Andre Drummond's not actually a good rebounder. Like he just is stands there and the ball occasionally comes to him when he's underneath, but like he's not getting contested rebounds. He's not doing
it's
that
such a once great in a while.
He's just not. Like he's just straight up not. He gets out rebounded all the time, and his teams are not good rebounding teams when he's out there, just because he happens to get rebounds. He's not. But there are things that Andre Drummond does well, and the last few games he hasn't done them very well.
No.
And that's been a struggle. So it's been huge for Bassey. Obviously the Blazers game was disappointment. A game they probably could have won if they executed a little bit better. But I think you're right. I think going forward, you know, this is a team that spent $30 million on Al Horford to be the backup center. And so finding, you know, playable minimum contract and second round pick guys, it's a bit of a bummer that it's at the expense of B-Ball Paul, who I do think can help, although he has struggled a little bit. I think B-Ball Paul can do more. I think B-Ball Paul can do the sort of like defending in space stuff that Bassey was a little bit struggling with. Bassey's more mobile than Drummond just because he's younger, but you saw it a lot last night. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's Doc or if that's Bassey's thing, but like he was dropping on Dame and CJ and just allowing them to walk right into screens. Eventually met him at the level, but didn't have a hand up on those pick and rolls, so had it really easy walk into type things. And then Doc went away from it late to try to go small, and then it was a parade to the layup line. It was just nobody was back there, and when it's Tobias is your rim protector and Matisse is up top trying to like guard the ball, it's tough to do. So I mean, it's these are issues that when Embiid is healthy, they won't really have. It'll be far fewer, you know, no crunch time minutes without Embiid, where you're gonna have to like survive, and you can do hard doubles on Dame or whatever when Embiid's back there to clean up your mistakes. You can't when it's fucking Tobias hoping or Maxie's down there like sometimes protecting the rim, and it's just like, come on, what are we doing? But also, if Embiid's not there, they're not gonna make the playoffs. So
To your point, by the way, about Bassey struggling, you know, with the pick and roll coverage and just dropping and Dame and CJ walking into those shots, obviously Joel Embiid is a massive upgrade defensively over just about any center in the NBA. But let's not act like that hasn't happened.
No, for sure.
Even with Joe over the last several years, like us begging to do I think they adjusted eventually, but like that's been an issue for years, you know. Mm-hmm. Even with Embiid, is that's what makes that action so hard to guard with players like Dame and CJ, is that their ability to hit those shots makes that really hard to
And that's why guys shooters like that, there's some guys you don't have to, like if it's Ja, you're fine dropping and you're fine making it hard on him. Even Trae Young, who is not as good of a shooter as he gets credit for from the outside and is a better creator and a floater and finisher than people assume. The difference is what we want from the Sixers, and this is almost what B-Ball Paul gets you, is you want a five that can protect the rim a little and switch a lot. And the Sixers still don't have that, and they still seem reluctant. I don't know if that's a Doc decision or a Dowell decision or just like a we ran out of roster spots or the guys that we wanted didn't want to come here or whatever it is. But, you know, we've talked about that enough. It's frustrating to that. But I think the Bassey thing is like, okay, cool. We have at least this. We have at least a guy, because Drummond is strange in that, like, I do think he has good hands when he's there. Like when he's nearby, he like slaps the ball away from ball handlers a lot, and it's impressive. And he gets his hand in passing lanes, and it's impressive, especially when he's like engaged and his motor's high. But he you don't want him moving around. Anytime he's moving around, it's such a lumbering situation.
Yeah.
And it's just never. He looks very lost and scared out there.
He looks out of shape. I mean, he looks fat. You know, sort of. I was thinking about. You mentioned like the Doc decision as to why they don't have that sort of player. Can you imagine how much Doc would have liked and defended Jahlil Okafor?
Yeah.
I can't imagine. What a fucking nightmare that would be.
I can imagine it a lot, yeah.
Before we talk about Maxi, I want to talk to you about your immune system, which has gotten a lot of attention over the last couple of years, obviously, and how important it is for you to be healthy and take care of yourself. And Body Bio, who is one of our sponsors, is intent on helping you out with that, right? And you know, you want to prevent getting sick, but if you do get sick, you want your body to be strong to be able to fight it off. And BodyBio is a supplement company who, you know, knows that, you know, you eating the right things and sleeping, that is super important, but you can do other things with supplementation that can make you even stronger and even healthier. And they are a locally owned and family owned company. They're a family run company. They are nimble. They're small, which means is good in this space because it means they can change as science changes. And they've got a few products that I think you should be interested in. First of all related to immune health. First of all, Elite. Elite keeps you hydrated properly. Hydrating is not just about drinking water. It is about having a proper mix of electrolytes and water. And what Elite is you don't want to drink like Gatorade, all that kind of shit. You don't want that artificial flavors, artificial covers. Elite is just electrolytes. Take a cap full of it, put it in whatever you drink in the morning, you're good for the day. Elite. The other one is their vitamin C supplement, which is liposomal vitamin C. There's a lot of vitamin C supplements out there, tons of them. And they all talk about immune system. But the reason that this vitamin C is different is your body actually gets it and absorbs it. Most of those, even from food, vitamin C is water soluble, which means you take it in and you piss it right out. But liposomal vitamin C does not release until it gets to your cells, which is more important. Your cells are made of lipids, so this waits till it gets to your cells. Body Bio is important. They're there to help you. They're there to keep you healthy, and they love the Reiki. Go to bodybio.com and use code RTRS20, and you'll get 20% off anything as long as you want it. RTRS20 for 20% off everything at Body Bio. Just try Elite, try the liposomal vitamin C, try Calm, try all the stuff we've talked about. Check out the site. Again, bodybio.com, RTRS20. Thank you, Body Bio. One guy whose body is holding up quite well is Tyrese Maxey, who continues to impress, even though the results of the games not so great. Had a great game against Portland. Well, specifically a great end of game. So his games without Embiid, like scored 16, 31, 33, 24, 16, 22, 28. Continuing to not be Mr. Distributor, but his assist to turnover ratio, like pretty unseen, you know, so far. And it does seem like with every game, he gets a little more comfortable doing the things that a scorer, we talked about, people get mad at me because they get mad at you. I questioned like what Maxey is at his best. And it seems like I would guess that his scoring will, like that is the direction, right? More than distributor. He will be, I think he will need to play with a distributor in the backcourt. You know, I don't think he can play with like a pure two in the optimal, you know, world. It's probably not like somebody like Seth Curry, but I don't know. He just seems more and more comfortable, and especially in crucial spots, taking the ball. And at this point, it's such a relief to see him doing that rather than like fucking Tobias Harris at this point. And it's just like the growth has been amazing. Like even look back to things that you said, and I know you're super high on him now and you were always higher on him, but even a few weeks ago before all this, you weren't even sure if he'd be like a multiple time all-star. And now like you look at somebody, I mean, it's just like the few weeks he's had, I think has changed the perspective of everyone. And I'm not quite where you are, where I think he's like, I know he's going to be a max contract guy, but man, like the evolution has been pretty crazy so far, you know?
I mean, yeah, he's been incredible. I think his numbers are, you know, they're down. They have to go down at some point. Like he's shooting 52% from the field, 42% on 3.4 attempts per game. He's shooting 56% on twos, which, I mean, so is Seth, which is crazy. But you just don't expect that from a guy that small that's not like known for his shooting touch.
No.
Or that explosive athletically. He's obviously explosive like quickness wise, but he's not like finishing above people. Mm-hmm. And he's shooting 87% from the line on three attempts per game. And the turnover is insane. What I don't know is you watch the game. I think I probably do know the answer. I'm saying, why is Doc not using him more? Because you're watching the game and you're seeing like he's beating guys off the dribble. Last night he had 9 assists to 0 turnovers. Again, he just doesn't turn the ball over. And I don't think it's because he's just not, I think he could afford to take riskier passes and open up his vision more. But I think he's
he's making passes. He's finding guys for open looks, and he's just making the right read. He's just doing the, like, you know, the basketball version of, like, check down, and just, like, being right. He's allowing the guy to take the shot. It's, like, not, like, the hardest thing in the world, but it's effective. I don't know why Doc isn't using him more. He's so clearly the best option. Like, Tobias had a pretty nice game last night, if you look at the numbers, and there was a bunch of plays where he did it, but, like, there was isolations on Covington, too many, like, head down, like, turning the ball over, too much. Like, Tobias was performing well as the ball gets swung to me. I'm either shooting this or I'm attacking downhill. But when it was, like, him at the top of the key, or like Tobias, which I don't love, but I've accepted it, Tobias posting up a smaller guy, because he is borderline automatic with that fadeaway against a smaller defender. When it's, like, a really good defender, it's not. The guy gets crowds of space and he makes a tough shot. But it's, like, almost, it's not quite, but almost DeRozan level automatic from the mid range, except he just doesn't get fouled the way DeRozan does. But, like, it was just too much. I really don't understand. I think eventually he hit those catch and shoot threes, and that was nice. But I really don't understand why there was a determination that, like, okay, Tobias has to have the ball in his hands all the time. Well, and, like, they kind of did it with Korkmaz also. And it's, like, it should be Maxi. He is the only guy on the team that is fast enough to get by people without any action. And you put him in a pick and roll, and it's just really easy for him to get wherever he wants. He doesn't take – it's honestly, like, he's a second-year player. He's obviously young. But as far as coaches go, you think about, like, Larry Brown, like any coach that, like, doesn't like to play rookies or young guys. It's because, like, oh, they make mistakes. They turn the ball over. They take bad shots, whatever. Maxi doesn't do that. He doesn't turn the ball over at all, which is remarkable. He doesn't take bad shots. He doesn't ever. And he tries his ass off on both ends. And I just, like, obviously they're using him a lot. He's playing a ton of minutes, but it seems like there's just too much him standing there in the corner in the wing.
Well,
waiting for, like, someone else's move to be pretty ineffective. And at this point, like, I've been on him, or not on him, because he's been incredible, but, like, the next evolution of his game for me is, like, hesitation, like, little change of pace stuff that he's kind of just going one speed. But, like, last night he had an incredible full speed spin move finish with, like, touch. It just, like, it seemed like his ball just, he puts it on the rim, it just like glides in. It's really impressive. I would like to see, especially without Embiid, more of him just being the focal point, because he should be.
Let me play devil's advocate and bring up a historical example and offer a reason as to why that is. I remember as we all do, of the Shake Milton of two seasons ago, the Shake Milton explosion out of nowhere, right? All of a sudden, like, Shake Milton was the best scorer on the team. And a lot of what people said was, you know, what was Brett Brown doing this whole time when he had Shake Milton there that could score? And he, you know, why wasn't he using him? There is the aspect we don't know, and I'm fully ready to criticize Doc Rivers whenever. I'm there. I'm fine with it. But you sort of have to, as Maxi evolves and as he's evolved really right before our eyes, as we've seen it, in an accelerated way that I don't think any of us expected. I'm sure somebody could say they did, but it doesn't even seem reasonable to expect his improvement so far.
No, I had very high expectations, and he's been better than I thought he would be.
Right. I think on some level, we sort of have to defer to anyone who's been there for this and in charge of it. And I wonder, there is something to the, hey, there's a vet there, and, you know, like, giving the vet the opportunity to do it, maybe, and failing, maybe later in the season allows you to go to Maxi when he, and maybe keeping some pressure off of him right now, because there's a lot of pressure on him, and putting him in specific spots where you know he'll succeed. I think some of it's on Maxi too, right? Like, I think Maxi in the Portland game specifically had advantages he maybe didn't take advantage of a lot early when he had the ball and didn't do anything with it. And there's that thing, I'm sure, going on in his mind where he's like, well, I'm a second year player and there's players out here and I want to make sure that I keep everyone involved. And this is not, you know, being a he's not a supernatural point guard the way that a natural point guard is. So it's probably something he has to think about as much as he just naturally does. So I just, when it gets down to brass tacks and we're in a more important situation, I would be ready to criticize it. At this point, I guess I would just sort of defer to whatever has gotten to him to this point, and maybe it's working. Do you know?
Yeah, I think that part of that's right. I think that the more specific example of that is that he's playing with the starters more.
Yeah.
And last season, if you look at his usage rate is down this season, despite the fact that he's, you know, scoring at a high level and seemingly like taking over games, but it's because he's not coming in off the bench and just being like, hey, it's you and like three other guys that we don't want to shoot. So do everything. And now he's on the court with Seth Curry, who has to have offense run for him. He's on the court with Tobias, and when Embiid's there, he's on the court with Embiid. And he is deferring a lot more. And it's still like, he's leading the team in minutes right now, which is crazy. Him and George Niang, the only guys that have played every game. Last night, I thought the most important thing was he had 17 shot attempts, which is second to the on the team to Tobias with 21, but he went to the line 9 times and hit all 9, which is a huge development to his game. And I hope that for sure more of that. I might just be being greedy at this point. I just think he's the best option there. And I think that there is some level of like, you got to play to your vets. You got to like let them run it. And maybe he even is still like, you know, reluctant or doesn't want to overstep or anything. And he's been incredible. He's just been incredible. I thought the best. Yes, I think like for a team, for a workplace, sometimes you have to prioritize like giving Seth or Tobias more opportunities. Seth has cooled down a lot over the last week or two. I think everybody just like is starting to feel the effects of no Embiid.
Yeah, him and Cork specifically.
Cork Miles has been pretty bad lately. But I just think in the situation that they were in last night and in a couple other games, they were the best way for them to win would have been just giving Maxi the ball and letting him operate and try to get to the basket, try to get to his spots, because they just don't. And we can sort of pivot away from those games now, but like, they just don't have enough players who are fast with the ball. I've been saying this for a long time. There's too many guys who are slow. Like, I think Shake's been pretty great. Actually, he's shooting way lower from three than I thought. He's only shooting 27%, so that's going to improve. But I think the rest of his game has been really, really good since he's come back.
He was a really good shooter, and he's
not. I know.
Not.
It'll get back there. But it's
– something happened.
Maybe. But
he went to the Sixers. Yeah.
He went to the Sixers. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
But he – Sorry, lost it. They don't have enough guys that are fast. And like in the first through third quarters of most games, you're looking at like Curry can get to his spots. You can get to your dribble handoffs. You can get to George Niang doing his thing. You can get to Korkmaz, whatever, distributing a little bit. But then when it tightens up, they just have no room to go anywhere because the defense is up in their face. And I think Niang is an interesting case because he's so good at finishing slowing down around the rim, like letting guys bounce off him and finish off the glass. I've been really impressed by his touch down low. I also had high expectations for Niang as a guy that can do more than just shoot, and he's also superseded those. I think Shake, as I said, like he has so much patience, and he's way more in control than he was when he was like trying to be like too much of a Lou Williams guy. He had a really nice like lefty floater and like a scoop. His touch is really nice these days, but there's just not enough guys that can, in the guts of the game, like really blow by anybody. And that's why as the Kings keep struggling, you know, I made the case for Jaylen Brown, which is obviously up to Boston. If they don't want to do it, then it's not going to happen. But I would love Jaylen Brown. I would do anything for Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
But one of the other guys that have been popped around a lot is De'Aaron Fox. If they decide that they want to move on from him, and I don't know that Fox Maxi is like the perfect fit, obviously. Although it's cool that they're two Kentucky guys and one only goes left and one only goes right. I think that's a fun thing. But they're both so fucking fast. And on a team where they have shooting, they have a ton of other shooting, and they have enough defense, especially when Embiid and Matisse are healthy. It might just be nice to have another guy on the court that can blow past somebody, because there's so much offense that the Sixers struggle with at the ends of games when they don't have anybody that can do that except for Tyrese.
So we'll get to the Fox thing in a second when we talk about the updated situation. Fucking dumb updated situation. So, you know, Black Friday is coming up this Friday, which starts the holiday shopping season. And I don't want you to forget to get something for your dog. You got to get a present for your dog. If you, if like this, around this house, Rebel has birthday parties. You know, Rebel gets Christmas presents. And let me tell you something. Your dog does not want to hear about any fucking supply chain issues. Your dog doesn't want to hear, doesn't understand the supply chain. Get your dog a Big Barker dog bed for Christmas if you haven't gotten your dog a Big Barker yet. Go to bigbarker.com/Ricky because your dog is going to know when your dog gets that Big Barker whether you went to that link, because it's going to have the process pup patch that you can iron on if you go to bigbarker.com/Ricky. You see, your dog is sitting there and goes to sleep and sleeps on this piece of shit bed that you got him at the pet store. It was $40. It looked puffy. Or maybe you got it on some Instagram ad. Look puffy, look poofy. Oh, this is a good one. It's $70, whatever. You get it. And I want you to look at when your dog sleeps on that bed, sinks basically right to the ground. Looks like a pillow, looks comfortable. You wouldn't want to sleep on a pillow. You want to sleep on a mattress. You want to be supported. And that's what a Big Barker is. It is the only dog bed on the market that has a real mattress that supports your dog's joints. It's real memory foam designed by an expert, engineered by experts to support your dog's joints. And it has been proven to do that by Penn Vet. Bigbarker.com/Ricky. Your dog spends a lot of time sleeping. It should be sleeping on a mattress that is keeping them healthier. Your job when you adopt a dog is to make that dog's life amazing. And the dog's life cannot be amazing without a Big Barker. Bigbarker.com/Ricky. And you might say, ah, it's a couple $100. How am I going to spend that much on a dog bed? Well, it'll be the last dog bed you probably buy. There's a 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. A 1-year at-home trial. If you don't like it, your dog doesn't like it, send it back. They'll even pay for the shipping full refund. Handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds. All right. So here are the updates for number 25. Keith Pompey reports that the Sixers at some point engaged in talks with the Detroit Pistons about a trade centered around Jeremy Grant. And who else was mentioned that the Sixers wanted? No. Within the Pistons.
Oh, Kelly Olynyk.
Oh yeah, Olynyk.
And then maybe Sadiq Bey.
Sadiq Bey. And then Kyle Newbeck, who has done a very good job, I would say, during the Simmons thing. Obviously, he is not the Woj or Shams guy, but he has done a good job sorting through the rumors once they come out. Kyle says that those talks have not happened in a while, and the Sixers were never specifically interested in Jeremy Grant for a number of reasons, one of which being fit, but the other one being that he's not really at the level of player that they're looking for. Then Sam Amick reports that there are 30 players. Now, that is short of my list of 68, but there are 30 players that the Sixers would consider trading him for, and that 5 or 10 of them are likely to be moved or change teams in the next year, some of which might be after the season, like a sign and trade, like Harden, you know, who they were interested in and who has begun to play much better and who has not signed his extension yet, but did not sign an extension. It doesn't make sense for him to sign an extension in Brooklyn financially. It makes more sense for him to wait till after the year. So, you know, their Amick reports that they're comfortable, you know, waiting till after the year. Of all the reporting this week, I thought that there was one paragraph that Kyle wrote that I thought was most interesting. And then I want to get back to the Sacramento thing because Jason Dumas tweeted out something last night that I thought was interesting. But Kyle said this: to this point, the major power players have been, quote, in the boat, so to speak, content to go to battle with what they have in the meantime. But Turner's Christian Ledlow reported last Tuesday that there are some in the organization ready to see Simmons hit the old dusty trail, and it would only take one major dissenter to change the calculus in the management suites. If Embiid demands they get something done, or Josh Harris wants to be done with the problem, or if Morey is simply tired of entertaining Simmons-centric calls, everything pivots immediately. That, I think, is interesting as those being the power players. Embiid, Harris, Morey. Because I do think Doc Rivers is in that whole thing as well, though he seems over the whole thing. My bet would be there's no way he is still on the team he's still a member of the organization post-trade deadline, that one of those will say enough already, and they are sort of in hyperdrive mode to make that happen. But I don't know. Now, Jason Dumas tweeted last night that the Sixers love De'Aaron Fox. It was sort of apropos of a comment. Jason does have, I don't know who his sources are, but he has had accurate information within the Sixers. I do believe he knows people within the organization that matter. Fox is an interesting guy, specifically because of Maxi and maybe the lack of fit there. You know, you said you wouldn't mind it. It doesn't, they seem a little similar, you know, but so that's all of that. I don't know what to take of any of that, but that's all of that.
Yeah. I wonder what the 30 is, like the 30 people. Is it like, is Giannis on that list?
Right. Like, is it just,
is yeah. it a realistic 30 or is it like, here's everyone, here's everybody, here's the whole list? In the
league? Because if it's a realistic 30, then their list is probably closer to like 40 players. You know what I mean? Like sure. the list. I was
is thinking, it written down somewhere? Is it on a whiteboard? Is it on Daryl's phone? Is it in his head? Is it on a Slack channel? Like where is that list placed? Could someone take a picture of the list? Like that was the Orlando Magic a couple years ago, right?
When yes.
They posted a picture of their of targets. That was good. Good for them. I don't know. I find it hard to believe that they love De'Aaron Fox. I like De'Aaron Fox and I'd be intrigued by him and Maxi backcourt. Just because you'd split them up most of the time. You would have one of them on the court at all times, which is helpful as based on what I just was ranting about.
Well, if they're both playing 36 minutes, it means that they're on the court together for 24, right? So, I mean...
12.
No.
12 minutes off. 12 minutes.
No, it means they're off the court. It means they're not sharing the court for 12 minutes if they're both playing 36.
Too much math. I don't have it in me this early.
Yeah, yeah. Trust me.
And it's like it's not perfect, but I think that they would be able to get by people. And especially if you believe in Maxi's jumper, which I do, in a Lowry Van Vliet type of way, obviously less worse shooting, but more penetration. So I find it hard to believe that they love De'Aaron Fox. Like, if De'Aaron Fox was the guy that they wanted, like he's in their like top tier, it seems like it might have already been done already. And also, like, why have the Kings been so bad if he's that desirable? I just find it a little hard to believe. I would take De'Aaron Fox. I'd be excited about De'Aaron Fox, but he's very clearly in the B tier for me of those 30
number names 28
written on Daryl's bicep. Yeah, so I don't know. The Jeremy Grant stuff, love Jeremy, a horrible trade from Brian Colangelo to trade him for Ilyasova. He's obviously turned himself into a really good player, not just in Denver when he was like a role player, but he did. Like he took the same amount of money to go to Detroit and like be the guy for a year. Then they drafted Cade, so he's like gonna have to take a step back a little bit, but he still gets to be some level of the guy-ness. I would like Jeremy here if Tobias wasn't here. If it was...
Well, I would like Tobias not to be here. I know. So if they could...
If there was... They just don't work well together. It's not the kind of guy where you're like, hand him the ball and let him operate. I think Jeremy would be a nice fit with Embiid. I think he'd be a nice fit as a legitimate small ball five when you want to go small. With Tobias there, it's just too many guys being in each other's way and not really... having enough dribble penetration. But Jeremy's turned himself into a good player. He's a good player. And I think Kelly Olynyk, obviously, he's hurt right now. He's out for like 6 weeks or something. But Kelly Olynyk obviously would have won them a championship in like three of the last four seasons because that's all they needed. They don't have it. That's fine. And I find it very hard to believe that they'd be, Detroit would be itching to trade Sadiq Bey, who is the perfect kind of player you want around Cade and Ben, theoretically. So I find that trade a little bit suspect. Yeah, I don't know. I'm still waiting for like several mystery teams. I wonder who else is on that list. It's very strange. And I think any trade to me, you know, I forget where we were. You talking about this where Daryl said Seth Curry is the best contract in the league? Were we talking about that on this podcast? Someone said that someone asked him. Oh, it was my friend that talked to him. Anyway, that was not a public conversation. Sorry, I shouldn't be saying it. But someone asked Daryl, what is the best contract on the team? And he said Seth's, which I get. He's a starter. He's one of the best shooters in the league. He can create offense. He's turned himself into a better player.
It's like the pound for pound question.
Yeah. He's making, you know, $8 million a year for two more years this year and another year. And I get, but it's just, I struggle with Seth because he really has a tough time playing defense anywhere.
He's so slow footed and small
and weak, and he struggles to get around screens. He struggles to contest. And like, it genuinely makes me undervalue his offense. Which is bad because he's an incredible offensive player. But like, when I watch him just get beat either off the dribble or around like simple screens or anything, it just seems, it really makes me like, I don't want him to be in my starting lineup on a championship team. I don't want to be depending on Seth Curry for 30 plus minutes a night on a contender because he's so weak in that area. And also, as we said, he's slow as hell with the ball. In the playoffs, he's just going to be worse. He's an incredible offensive player, does a lot of things well, has made himself into a way better player than anyone has ever given him credit for. Absolutely.
He's but a like, great 22-minute-a-game player or something. You know,
when I look around and I try to like place the best off, like, you know, put my GM hat or whatever on, it's just like it's hard to put a guy there with him. And I wonder if, you know, he's so useful to this team right now, especially with Joe. Him and Joe have probably the best chemistry of any two-man tandem, probably the best of Joe's career outside of JJ. And I just wonder is there like you sneak Seth into a Ben trade to get the guy that you want
and to the right team,
kind of player. Because he's a nice fit there. And if you have a wing that also can create, honestly, maybe it's Boston. Like you have a wing that can also create in Tatum and this kind of thing. Now I'm not saying Boston exactly, but like, then Ben can be another initiator and Seth doesn't need to be like a legitimate point guard. But yeah, I don't know. He's very good and I undervalue him sometimes, but it's because of like the struggle defensively that you're always going to have with a guy like him playing that many minutes.
Look, I don't know what his habits are, but like, would it hurt him to get in the gym a little bit? Like and work out like
he's the second best percentage shooter of all time. So I get why he's like, I'm working out the exact amount that I'm doing. I'm not touching these arms.
By the way, and somebody emailed us about this. He not only is he a white t-shirt under the jersey guy, he wears the same one every time because you can see the holes on the shirt. It's in the same place. So he's like dirty, doughy. Like, look, Seth Curry, just incredible shooter, has been good, seems like a great, you could just do a little more like cardio and some push-ups and shit like that. Like if he was built like Josh Richardson and was Seth Curry,
oh yeah, he'd like, be one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, look, obviously you're a professional athlete, you're obviously in much better condition than me, but maybe just if you have some extra time in between shooting, and I know you're a gamer, and you bring a computer and a screen everywhere you go. Just if you took 20%, you can game, but if you took 20% of the gamer time and just dedicated it to like an elliptical or rowing machines, great cardio, swimming.
Sure, yeah. Like a running machine.
Get in better shape.
I also think just while we're talking about the team, they are so clearly missing a legitimate point guard to the point that last night they put Isaiah Joe in to basically be point guard for a couple stretch. He took Shake or Maxie out. And it was like, the lineup was like Isaiah Joe, Korkmaz, Tobias, Matisse, Bassey, or something like that. I love Isaiah Joe minutes. I want Isaiah Joe minutes. I think he should be in there, especially when Korkmaz is struggling or when Shake is struggling. Like he should be the first guy up. It should be a pretty quick leash because of how voluminous his outside shot is. but like it can't be at the expense of a guy who can actually handle the ball. Like his handling is gravy. It's not like what you want from him right now. And I will say off of that, very me thing to say, Grant Riller is healthy.
Yeah, that's good news. He's another guard.
He can handle the ball. Is an incredible handle. He's in the G League right now, working himself back up to strength. I want him in, if we're not going to get, but until we get that guy, I would like some Grant Riller minutes. Genuinely. I want it. I want to see it. I want to see some distribution because they've been good. Like this team has been, I was very low on this team as a passing team, very low. And they do pass the ball well. They find each other. They move the ball. Sometimes Tobias is like a beat late. Sometimes they're not looking in the right direction, whatever. I think Drummond has helped that a little bit. I think Bassey in the last couple of games has been a very nice revelation on the short roll. Like those kinds of things, it's nice. Niang, Korkmaz, really nice. But the combination of good ball handling and passing, getting by your guy and creating stuff rather than just like dribble handoff, swing, without Maxi in there. It'll be nice. So give me some Grant Riller minutes. I'm happy to see Matisse back. Obviously, he's not going to help that, but I thought he provided some nice energy last night. But like, give me, I need some ball handling. Give me Grant Riller.
Mike, our original sponsor, the first one, is LL Pavorsky. Mike bought his engagement ring from LL Pavorsky Jewelers. We actually heard I won't say who it was, but a very close friend of Val's got proposed to last night with an LL Pavorsky ring. That happened last night. We got the text message. Got an email. I'm not going to use this gentleman's name. I don't think this counts as a Pavorsky engagement, but I had a great experience buying a ring from him last summer. My wife and I eloped a few years ago and didn't do anything traditional, no real ceremony, no party, no rings, etc. Since I grew up in a conservative, insular, ultra-religious community where the idea of marriage was forced down our throats from a young age, traditional marriage customs gave me anxiety and triggered bad feelings about my upbringing. But this year I loosened up and decided to get my wife a ring. I knew the only way I'd feel comfortable with the process would be purchasing from someone who felt safe and trustworthy. Wow. Had to be LL.
I like loosened up. Loosened up and went to LL. That's what we all need to do.
Yep. Sure enough, he was laid back, friendly, understanding, not at all pushy, something I initially felt trepidation about. Ended up being a pleasant, fun experience. I needed a 6-day turnaround on the ring order so I could surprise her on our anniversary trip, and he came through in time. Wow. Unfortunately, the engravers made a misspelling on her ring.
No.
And I had to take it with us on the trip anyway. She was thrilled to get the ring, despite the misspelled engraving and the fact that I miscalculated her ring size.
Oh, so
ignore the fact that her name was spelled wrong on the ring and was the wrong size. Everything else is great. Lee told me to come back with her and the ring to measure her size and send it back to fix the engraving. At the store, my wife decided she liked a different, more expensive ring model. Not only did Lee exchange the ring for...
And she deserves it after you fucked it up.
Yep, fuck that up. Not only did Lee exchange the ring for her actual size and fix the engraving for free, but to make up for the engraver's mistake, he didn't charge us for the upgrade to the more expensive one. My wife loved him in the store, and I am so grateful. As a Ricky listener, there is no other way. What a great ad. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, been there for over 30 years. Look, you want LL, you got to make an appointment. Email him, lee@llpavorsky.com, tweeted him at @LLPavorsky, and a phone number, 215-627-2252. Supporter of our charities, Coded by Kids, Providence Animal Center, LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
The loosener.
For sure. So the YouTube comment of the week, and I would like to say we got several emails about this. YouTube comment of the week brought to us by Kinetic Skateboarding. Hey, Christmas coming up, Hanukkah coming up. You need gifts, Kinetic Skateboarding. New snowboards, free tunes for life, kineticskateboarding.com. Okay. YouTube comment of the week. Now, we got several emails about this. We did read an email on the last pod about a gentleman who bought a $150 gold tooth, accidentally swallowing it. Then he was so intent on finding the tooth that he bagged his poop for several days and went through the poop to find the gold tooth.
Of course.
That happened. We got several, and here's the YouTube comment. It comes from Brian B, and we got several emails about this. The obvious question that was inexplicably never asked is whether he's planning on putting the tooth back in his mouth.
Absolutely.
And you said that you would do this. Even if it was your own poop.
When we had Dasher and Blitzen here, and we used our backup bowls for them. But sometimes we use those backup bowls for, like, you know, whisking eggs and stuff.
Yeah.
We put them in the dishwasher, run them and stuff. And then I'm like, okay, great. They're backup bowls again. And Alyssa's like, no, they can't go back to being from, like, dog mouth to now we eat our food out of them. And I'm like, it went through the dishwasher. It did the cleaning process.
Yeah, it's not like a restaurant, right? Like,
I think all of it. I think that's the same philosophy I bring to Gold Tooth and Poop. Mm. I think get it cleaned. Clean it however the best you can. But also it's like it's going back where it belongs. Otherwise, why did I go through my bags of shit to just have a gold tooth that I can, like, put on a mantle and look at it? I want the gold tooth in a tooth spot.
Imagine telling that story when you're wearing your gold tooth. Let me tell you a story about this tooth.
Yeah.
I got it out of my butt. Yeah. Now, we got an email, and then we'll move on from this. We got an email to writestrickysanchez@gmail.com. Now, you remember CJ followed up on that story and asked you about your dropping a phone in a porta potty and not going to get it.
Right.
Interesting thing here. So we get this email from Ben. Ben says, you guys have shared stories of the small world of Ricky listeners in the past. So I had to email you guys about the last podcast because you, with the help of CJ, hilariously linked two listener email poop topics together without knowing a deeper connection existed. First off, I about died laughing, listening to Spike barely make it through the email about the guy searching through his own poop for the $150 gold tooth. While you were reading and laughing, I kept thinking to myself, wait a minute, I know this story. After you and Mike discussed whether or not you'd sift through your own poop for something valuable, CJ chimed in to refer back to the phone in the porta potty conundrum. Mm-hmm. Well, I just got off the phone with my little brother, who called to ask if I had listened to the most recent pod. He called because not only was he surprised and delighted you shared his story about searching for a gold tooth in a bag of your own feces, but also because you guys linked my previous email about dropping your phone in a porta potty. Yeah. So yeah, over the course of a couple weeks, you two read poop-related non-basketball questions and somehow linked the two, not knowing they were sent by brothers. Feels like the Ricky Universe
family podcast.
Yep, is one of the few places something as dumb and funny as something like this would happen. So I guess I'll finish with this actual question, which perhaps continues to link the two topics. What is the lowest value item you'd search your own poop for? $100, $1,000?
My own poop. Again, I think that makes all the difference in the world.
What is the lowest value item? We already determined you do it for $150. Would we do it for
$100? Yeah, We'll set it at 100.
And if
because it's
if
my you own, knew... but a porta potty, no.
Okay.
The environment, because when it's my own, I could be in, like, I could sterilize the whole bathroom. I could be like, I could lay down some drop cloth. We could really, like, make it happen. But in a porta potty, it just, there's too much grossness. I could isolate the situation. If it's
so the last thing I'll say is, you set it 100. If you knew that in your poop there was going to be a $50 bill, you would not go through the poop for the 50?
No.
Okay. All right.
Because also harder to wash off a bill.
Right, for sure. And Ben says, after the last pod and discussion over the last few years, and you guys listening to the debate between sitting through a porta potty versus your own stuff, I feel like an email with a unique and borderline expert opinion. I've been working for a porta potty company for about a year now and have smelled, seen, and sifted through some of the most unimaginable shit you could ever think of. After doing all of this, I can safely and confidently say there's absolutely a difference.
Oh my God.
So there you go.
He pulls out this friggin' porta potty expert card.
Yep.
What a reveal.
Yep. We got a lot of Tobias emails. This comes from David. The subject line was trade Toby instead. Tobias is very efficient the regular season, but I'm not crazy about his game in the playoffs. And I know 25 has his issues, but he's younger, under contract for 4 more years, and I like him better as an overall player. My question is there any way we can trade Tobias?
No.
It's
over. It's over. Any conversation that ends in Ben miraculously coming home and being, you know, greeted like a champion and everybody loving him and the team being so happy to play for him and Ben being so happy to play for Doc. Maybe if you fired Doc and traded Tobias and maybe also traded Embiid and it was just like Ben and Maxi and Shake, then that would be, then that there's your team. But like, I think we're so far past it. And I get the idea of trading Tobias. I get the idea of like eventually getting rid of him and being like, yeah, just not that perfect of a fit. Just you'd want a guy that could just hoist a little quicker and defend a little harder, all that stuff. And based on the return in the Ben trade, that will either get better or worse with Tobias. But I don't think it's going to happen this season. Maybe in the offseason, but not this season.
I hadn't thought of this question. Let's imagine a world in which none of the last 5 months have happened.
I would love
and to. The last three games of the Hawks season didn't happen. Let's say everybody just played normal and they just fucking lost.
Or beat the Hawks and got swept by one.
Yeah. They just lost. They lost. But you know what you know now about Maxey the player for one reason or another. And I ask you, you can have Maxey or you can have the other guy. Contract is what it is. Who would you take?
I'd say probably at the time, it's tough to divorce myself from the last 5 months.
But they didn't happen.
It's hard. I think it's kind of impossible to know. I think the honest answer is then I would have said Ben. Now I would say Tyrese. Mm-hmm. But I think it's hard to rip those away from each other.
From Eli, watching Tobias run the offense has been one of the most infuriating things. Everything is static and his possessions inevitably end with a turnaround jumper out of a post-up that isn't really a mismatch. Maxey is so much more dynamic, and whenever he is allowed to actually run the offense, it feels like we get looks at the rim or we create an open three. It seems like sometimes Doc wants him to do the thing where he brings the ball up, gives it to Tobias, and then stands around the rest of the possession. And this goes to something we were talking about earlier. Do you think Doc actually likes what Tobias gives them in terms of running the offense more than Maxey, or do you think it's a seniority thing? Do you think...
I think both. I think it's part of both. Hmm. I think, Tobias, there's a lot of negative Tobias sentiment out there. He's not having a bad year. He's still shooting 50% from the field, 36% from three. He's not getting the line that much. He's getting the line actually some of the lowest in his career, but he's got the highest defensive rebound percentage of his career. He's got the highest assist rate in his career. He's like a helpful player, and he's miscast sometimes, and some of that is his own, you know, style of play. But he's a good player. He's good for the locker room, and that genuinely matters. And the team, we talk about like vibes and everything, and everyone being so happy and excited, like how the Sixers are exciting and fun when Ben's not there. A lot of that's because Tobias. Like it genuinely is.
No.
He's got the highest. He's right now. I think the thing is he has easily the highest usage rate of his career at 27%. When before his highest was 23.9%, and so like there's too much Tobias. I think when Embiid gets back, it'll be less Tobias, but he's good. I'm not like dying to trade him right now. I'm not like I'd rather be. I'm pleased with how Tobias is, and sometimes in doses. I think we just need some more doses.
I can't believe he has a max contract.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
Yeah,
but there's plenty of max contracts that are a mistake. They're sure. Like this it's is not the only one.
All right, two more emails. First from Brian. Where is Thanksgiving rank in your holiday rankings? I have it at number two behind Christmas/Hanukkah, but my friends have it last. I know what I think. Yeah. I know what I think about Thanksgiving. What do you think?
I mean, it's hard to separate it from like all the torturous stuff of its historical past. And so obviously that's not what the question is asking. Yeah, it is hard. It is.
So when you go and see your family,
when it's Thanksgiving time and people are talking about it, it's hard to be like, yeah, we slaughtered a whole group of people like to make this happen, and then dressed it up and pretended like it's kids can have like but do like little finger turkeys and stuff. So it's a little it sometimes feels gross, but then you after a while you're like, I'm having a good time. I think the food and family and like nice meal and some football and stuff makes it. A positive, not that any other holiday doesn't also have like bloodshed and stupidity. If you can separate it out, then I would have it pretty close to the top, if not the top.
Yeah, I have it at the top simply because there's no gifting involved. I like
I'm pretty bad at gifts, genuinely. I think it's probably one of my worst qualities. Like, I'm bad at getting people gifts and remembering to get people gifts and thinking about getting people gifts. I'm just not good at it. I have a lot of great qualities, I'll say it, but I'm bad gift guy. And I'm also bad at receiving gifts. I'm not like, there's like, oh, Mike has so many things you want to get him. Just like, leave me alone. don't ask me for anything.
I like the idea. I really love the idea of, I saw this and I got it for you because I think you would like it.
But see this? I don't see this.
No. Here's what I'm, you're not generally concerned with others in a specific way. I think in a global way you are. Well, you're just, you know how like the galaxy or whatever is heliocentric. I feel like, you know, your galaxy is sort of Mike-centric in a way.
That's a bullshit thing to say and wrong.
Hmm. Well, I think, so you're not somewhere. Take Alyssa, for example. And you're in the mall or on the internet and see something and like, oh, that's something Alyssa would like. I'm going to get it for her.
I don't like go to the mall and just like look around.
Well, you see products. You're on the internet.
I genuinely don't. I don't see products.
You don't see products. So how do you get things for yourself?
Well, I'll look for like, we need whatever, like some pot or a pan or wallpaper or something, and we'll get that. And then I'll talk to Alyssa and be like, should we get this one? And then we'll do it.
So TV, commercial TV writer Mike, who lives in Los Angeles, is completely free of consumerism.
Pretty much. Once in a while, I'll see like someone will send me like a link on Twitter to like, oh, here's like a cool shirt from like this like obscure college that looks pretty subtle and cool. Mm-hmm. But like, I have too many of those already. So I'm like maxed out on how many of those shirts, but that's about it. I don't see it. Again, commercials don't work on me. Doesn't happen.
The reason,
except for LL commercials and all of our sponsors who I love.
The reason that I enjoy Thanksgiving is no mandatory gift giving, though I do enjoy gift giving and gift receiving if it is not mandatory. But when it becomes mandatory, I don't enjoy it as much. And it is not specifically tied to a religious practice. And I have no problem with religion. I've said many times I respect and, you know, anybody who's religious is great. But like the fact that Thanksgiving is sort of not tied to gift giving or religion in any specific way. It's just tied to seeing your family and friends and eating and watching television is, I think, what I like. I'm going to end on a jigsaw from Justin because I feel like we haven't gotten this word in a while. So a jigsaw, obviously, a would you rather. And this is for the rest of your life, Mike. Would you rather have a beautiful large penis, but you have to insist that Spike does an ad read before you can get intimate with someone? Or alternatively, Spike, you have to insist that Mike tells your partner about why Zaire Smith deserved minutes off the bench in the playoffs before using this beautiful penis. Or you're extremely gifted sexually, but have a comically small penis and everyone knows it.
I think the second one. Because you could have a big dick and not know what to do with it. But if you're extremely gifted sexually, everyone's having a great time. You make it work.
Comically small is something else, man. Everyone knows it.
I don't know how everyone would know it, but if people know that I make it work, I'd make it work. Extremely gifted.
Yeah, I mean, not just that I have to tell the Zaire thing, but I have to insist that you do it is a mood breaker.
Well, I'd make the case. I would do a good job.
Well, she would no longer be interested in sex because she'd be so into the Zaire Smith part of it.
Yeah, that's right.
The thing about comically small that everybody knows, like you're sitting in a meeting at work and everybody knows you have a comically small penis.
And you make it work. And they respect it for it.
It's tough. So Monday night, the Sixers play the Sacramento Kings as the road trip continues on. Maybe they'll just hand over De'Aaron Fox and we can be done with this whole thing. And if you don't, maybe it'll go into the offseason. We'll get a sign and trade and we'll find out the list of 30. We'll never know. We'll talk to you next time. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You know the case. If you don't fuck with me...
Then I won't fuck with you. But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for plan B.